I think that there is real value in coaching people around the conflicts that they're facing in ways that are very tangible, very practiced, and as closely as possible mimic what's actually going to happen for them when they get themselves in that situation of conflict that they know they're going to face or that they've faced in the past. And to do that in a way that's embodied and brings all of what people know in their minds, in their quality of thinking, in their bodies, and in their sensations in a moment that's truly difficult, that can be transformational. And that is just so powerful for helping people face into the real situations that they have. It's not a scenario that we're debriefing. It's the scrimmage before the game. It's the practice field before the match. It's all of that kind of a thing. And I've seen it have a very different impact than just talking through people's options or dilemmas.
That's Chris Grigo, the Global Director of People and Organizational Development at the Ford Foundation. And the core of Chris's work centers on this idea of helping people develop conflict resolution skills by asking the right questions and becoming aware of their unique bodily response to conflict.
I think about conflict as any kind of tension that somebody is holding either within themselves or much more commonly with other people that they're working with, living with, or engaging with day to day. Conflict is a natural part of life. I mean, all of us have conflict. And for me, the conflicts that get addressed in coaching are usually the ones that are rising to a level of interfering with something that's important for somebody.
Every conflict is completely unique, depending on the particular circumstances in your client's life. And as coaches, we can help our clients resolve those conflicts. Welcome to the Coach Factory Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Heskin. And when it comes to managing conflicts, there is no one-size-fits-all approach. So how do you navigate that conversation with your client?
So certainly the clients that I see, they're coming in sometimes with just their own conflicts, something about the way their lives are structured, something about the way their work unfolds, the situations that they're in. There's just some kind of fundamental tension, let's say, between their values or what matters to them and what's actually playing out. Or there's a tension between their ideal state, their ideal condition, and the one that they find themselves in. So that's one set of conflicts that I see. Another, of course, are interpersonal conflicts, and that could be with one person or multiple people. And this, again, is where folks are at odds, either around their perspective on a given topic, subject, something happening in the business, or just the ways that they're working. So there's some kind of interpersonal tension, ways of engaging that people are trying to navigate. And I also see sometimes conflicts that people are experiencing that are broader, something about the workplace, a fundamental misalignment between the direction of things that are happening in their workplace, the way the work feels day to day, the ways people engage in it, something like that that's kind of more structural to the ways a business works or an organization works and the ways that they want to be working as an individual. So when people come to me with a conflict, of course, I want to get a sense of what's going on and what the context is. The other big thing that I, as a coach in conflict, want to think about is what matters to this person. So I ask them a lot about what is it that you want to see? What would be an ideal outcome for you? What would you like to see? What would be a best case scenario? And sometimes we play with multiple scenarios. What's the very best case scenario? What's a likely and viable solution or outcome that we can come to? And I like to get them clear about what won't work for them or what would be a solution that's not really very satisfying at all. So we start there with, for the sake of what are we trying to go about this whole resolution anyway? What's the outcome that we seek?
Once you're clear on the outcome or resolution your client wants, it's also important to understand the underlying factors that may be at play behind the scenes, including interpersonal dynamics. Jesse Punya is the president of August Public, and she's built much of her coaching on helping businesses resolve conflicts in teams. And understanding those personal goals, especially how they differ for each person involved, can help your client get clarity on the big picture.
The most common place where I see conflicts arise in organizations is nearly always, I'd say 9 times out of 10, always around decision-making and specifically a lack of clarity around who gets to make what call. So sometimes that can be amongst peers. So peers in this tug of war around who gets to make what call, who gets to provide advice, and who gets to make the final call. The biggest misunderstanding when it comes to conflict is that it's interpersonal. I work with folks who say, Sally and Bob don't get along. And usually there is something structural. There is something in the ways that we interact with each other that is creating them or pushing them into some kind of conflict. When I'm working with teams, I see varying levels of conflicts, ranging from day-to-day logistics, running the team, that level of conflict that usually gets swept under the rug and people just suck it up and move along. And then it can get into escalating levels of conflict, I would say all the way to the top of the house, which is more requires maybe a third party to step in and mediate or participate when it comes to conflict.
Jesse's experience with teams highlights just how critical it is to identify the underlying source of the conflict. The next step is asking the right questions and directing your client to look at their own tensions and tendencies before you dive straight into solutions.
For me, this is part of like the core coaching questions we would ask anyway at the beginning of a session. What do you want to focus on today? Why does that matter to you? Or what about that's important? How will we know that we're making the kind of progress you desire? And then where do you want to start? So that's just like how we always start a coaching session. And for me, it's kind of that simple with the conflict resolution piece. Now, the other frameworks that can be happen that I have found to be useful are classic ones. So I'll just point to books like Getting to Yes, which is a very old conflict resolution book. A framework that can be helpful is something called BATNA. What's my best alternative to a negotiated agreement? That's what BATNA stands for. What's my best alternative to negotiated agreement? And that's what I'm trying to get at when I ask people, what are the solutions that are going to work for them? And that's important to me because it can happen that people will find some relief in kind of any solution. And then a little bit down the road when they're in it, realize they left a bunch of stuff that mattered on the table, or they didn't really have a way to think what's kind of a win-win or my very best outcome. What are a couple of good outcomes that'll work? And also when would I say, no, this isn't going to work for me in a conflict that I'm navigating. So once we have a sense of what do I want to get out of the conflict and what are my moves if this doesn't work out so well, then I want to start to help the client I'm coaching to explore what are their, what we call in somatics, conditioned tendencies. What are my habits when I find myself in conflict and those tensions arise? And the three big ones that I often orient to, just to keep it really simple, are, is the person I'm working with likely to move, do they describe moving against conflict when they face it? So some disagreement comes and they're gonna move against that. They're gonna really kind of like continue that conflict escalation. Are they gonna push into it, which is really lean in heavily to their point of view to try to convince somebody of the rightness of that so that people relent? Or are they avoidant? Are they gonna pull back and pull away? And it's really important, I think, for clients, once they know what they want of the outcome, to know, hey, and when I get into this situation, I'm probably gonna either fight, because that's just what I like to do. I'm gonna try to convince and lean in because I'm an advocate, or I'm gonna pull back and avoid because that's more comfortable for me for whatever reasons. And that each of those helps, because if I know somebody tends to move against in most of the situations they're in, then we want to start to talk about how does that serve them and not serve them, and what are some alternatives. If they kind of lean in heavily, including accommodating, they're going to just lean in and say, what can I do? How can I help? How can I make this better? What do they give up in that situation, or what's left on the table? And if they pull back and avoid and just say, oh man, conflict, I'm out. What does that leave? Again, what does that leave unsatisfied? Because ultimately I'm still orienting toward what's the outcome? What is it that they really want to achieve, and why does that matter?
This default reaction to conflict that Chris is talking about goes beyond just a mental response. Somatics is the practice of using the mind-body connection to help you survey your internal self, listen to the signals that your body's sending, and then understand the ways that you hold on to your experiences in your body. And it's central to how Chris prepares his clients to feel in control when they face conflict.
It's basically your embodied experience of what's happening here and now. Many of us have embodied practices of some kind where we go to the gym, we run, we swim, we do yoga, we do meditation, and all of these are kinds of somatic practices. So somatics is your embodied leadership, your embodied transformation, your embodied living. And that's a powerful approach in my experience, because it helps people get really clear what's happening for them. They can actually feel it in the moment, and then they could use the information they're feeling in the moment to adjust, adapt, and choose their next move.
But how do you turn somatics into hands-on, tangible practices? As a coach, your unique skills in drawing clients toward awareness allow them to feel in control of both the process and their response.
So what somatics looks like in a conflict situation is to have a client talk about a conflict that they're in, or a conflict that's pretty typical for them. And as a coach, I'm going to do a number of things, which is I'm going to be listening, of course, for the words, the assumptions that they're bringing in. I might ask some questions about, what happens for you in that moment, or what do you find yourself doing in that moment? I'm also watching them, and if I'm in the room with them, I'm also scanning their body for where I might notice what they're doing, how they're leaning forward, leaning back, how they kind of lower themselves or puff themselves up, if they're clenched or tight in certain areas. And all of that is somatic, is bodily information that I want to help them draw attention to. Ultimately, when I'm working somatically, I'm trying to help people be somatically aware, which is, I notice I'm clenching my jaw as I talk about this situation, or I feel myself getting tight in the chest. Then I want to help them to have somatic openings, which is ways to experience a little bit more of that and to think about what else is happening for them in that moment. So awareness, opening, what else is possible, what else might be possible, what would you like to be feeling in your body that you're not feeling now? And then somatic practices, which are ways for them to work on those things. So I want to soften my jaw in those moments. I want to stay present in the moment when this happens. So those are the ways that I would bring somatics in a tangible way into the moment and into the conflict.
The art of listening is one of the cornerstones of coaching. And it's interesting how really listening goes beyond just hearing words. And we can help our clients develop that same level of awareness.
I think sometimes when we're called in as a third party, or if you are called in as a third party as a coach, sometimes we're so keen and eager to show value and participate, we skip that discovery step. So I would recommend I have my own personal set of questions, but you to have your own set of questions that you feel like will help you understand the people in front of you. I think my way of doing this work is about building trust with folks. And the way that we do that is by being authentic, by having what the model would say is logic, but credibility, and then showing empathy. So how can you ask questions and get to know folks that in a way that builds trust? So when you do have spicy questions, or where you do have a rock that really needs some help to be overturned, folks trust you and they'll share freely.
Think of a time you had to work through a conflict with a client. Did the client trust you? Did they feel really heard and understood by you? Because once you're aware, the process of reading their cues and guiding them toward a resolution can begin.
I think that somatic awareness really serves clients because we're beginning to make conscious and explicit things that are happening anyway. So there's lots of ways to think about this, including if we just start with one place, there are mirror neurons. So if I'm working with somebody and we work together over time, the extent to which I can keep my own physiology, my nervous system kind of in check and humming along, theirs is going to be able to do something similar. So there's just something cellular that happens when people are together. That's one good reason to be aware of what you're doing. Another is because oftentimes other people know what it is more than we do. If I can begin to be aware that my body does something, or I have a kind of a tell or something's going on for me, that just helps me to align with what other people might be picking up on anyway. And then if some of those kinds of behaviors are getting in the way of what I really want in a given situation, then it's important to be aware so I can think, I can see myself leaning in a little, I'm overcommitting to a position, or I'm overcommitting myself in this piece of work. And that's not going to meet my needs over time. It's not going to be good for everybody else over time either. What does it look like right in this moment for me to kind of pull back a little bit so other people can step in? or give space to the person I'm in conflict with so that they can express what's important for them and we can figure that out in a way that's a little bit more mutual.
Chris points to three benefits to this practice that not only make approaching conflict more manageable, but can become new habits that can resolve a conflict before it even becomes a concern.
So my language for this is that having these kind of embodied practices, these somatic practices, help us to feel and be more present, more open, and more connected. And that includes to ourselves. So to the extent to which I can help a client who doesn't already have some of these kinds of things to say, hey, I'm in a conflict situation. I know these things happen to me because I'm now really present to the fact that they happen for me. I want to stay connected to that and to the people who are around me, to what matters. And I want to stay open to doing something other than my habit. And we're always talking about the habits that are not serving us well. So there might be a good reason why I have this habit. Or this habit, this kind of way of being may have served me at an earlier point in my career or in another context, but it's no longer really serving somebody where they need it to. And that's where they have an opportunity to say, okay, let me get present to this. Let me stay connected and let me stay open, including to something else being possible and a part of myself, a way of being, a strategy for engaging that I just haven't developed the same way. So we always start by saying whatever habits we have, we've come by them honestly. They serve a real purpose. We will even do practices where we appreciate them explicitly, say, man, this thing has kept me safe, or this thing has kept me in relationship. And it's not so much doing that now. And what else might be possible that I can explore within myself that I haven't already?
And once you feel ready, it's time to face the conflict. Jesse's been at this point many times, and it's fascinating to hear how resolving the conflict doesn't always follow the path you might expect.
I was recently coaching a team who were working on kind of reimagining the way one of their processes work. And we had a meeting at the end of the week with their sponsor, with the very senior person who most of these people on the team typically wouldn't ever share a room. They were enough levels senior for the rest of the team that it felt like a high stakes moment. And so lots of back and forth and debate. And I think, you know, sometimes this happens in corporate speak. It doesn't read a conflict. People aren't raising voices. People aren't scrunching their faces. But there's a lot of passive aggressive comments and kind of ping pong or tennis back and forth with ideas, because essentially the idea that is out on the table isn't right. And so that's where I step in as a coach, and I ask folks and try and move the team along by asking things like, is this safe to try? Not, is this the best thing that we can put in front of that senior leader, but is this safe to try? Will this cause harm? And that helps the team move forward through the conflict, resolve the conflict, but still also have something that they can show that leader at the end of the week.
Have you ever driven through a dense fog or a heavy storm when it's really hard to see? That's how it can feel when you're trying to navigate conflict. But that confusion clears when you look at it through the lens of basic human needs. And somatic practices are a powerful tool in clearing the fog.
The kind of embodied practice, somatic practice I do, we're often orienting toward three primary needs. And there's lots of hierarchies of needs out there, but just that we're talking about most people are trying day to day to take care of their needs for dignity, for just an inherent worth and a sense of dignity as a person. Safety, of course. And belonging, that just as humans, we want to be safe, we want to belong, we want to have a sense of dignity versus shame or some other kind of experience. And so if a client is engaging in a kind of a out of habit or in an automatic way, I get to think, oh, this person's trying, I wonder what it's trying to take care of. Dignity, safety, and or belonging could be a combination of them. And then I can get curious about, oh, I wonder if this tendency of theirs to give up a little bit of their dignity in this moment is because it helps them feel or take care of safety needs, or they can stay in the relationship and be safe even if they have to compromise on that. And so when you come at it, it's really from that point of view, and I share this with clients that I'm trying to help them have safety, dignity, and belonging. That means also that when it's an ugly process, quote unquote, or it's not as easy for them as they want, we dignify that. We say, yeah, but look at where we are, or like, good on you for trying to take care of something, and let's stay with it. And that makes a big difference for people. It's a lot more supportive of a process, and it, if you're managing shame or guilt or regret or a sense of self-judgment, that's energy bleeding out that you could be directing toward this thing that you really want and making some kind of incremental, even transformational shifts over time. So that's again what I love about this approach is that it helps me think, oh yeah, this person wants to be safe. They want to belong. They want to have dignity. I want those kinds of things too. I get it. And so how do I bring my best self to supporting them in getting those, all three of those things more of the time? The phrase then so my somatic teachers often say is we're trying to help people take new action under the same old stress. So how do I help this person take new action with the same stress? So it's not that their workplace is going to change or that their spouse is going to change or whatever it is going to change necessarily, but they might have some different ways of being and engaging within that. And that's what we're trying to unlock.
It's this human element of coaching that makes it different from any other industry. You connect to your client's needs, and that allows you to build solutions that protect their vulnerabilities. But in order to build, we have to have the right tools. And Jesse has found some in rather interesting industries.
So the first tool that I recommend to teams and often find myself using is the tool of retrospectives or retros. This is borrowed from Agile software. People have these scheduled on their calendars every either 4 to 6 weeks, and they have them scheduled as far out as possible. And that is because people can trust and rely and know that they have a team shared moment where we're going to get together and revisit everything. Everything is on the table. And just by having that on the calendar can help people really focus on their work and know that they have a moment to share and consider the team. And then when you get people in that moment, I really recommend you ask three questions. What worked? Where did you get stuck? And what might we do differently next time? And those questions sound very simple, but they are pretty powerful and sophisticated. Those first two questions really get a good lay of the land. They make sure everyone speaks from the I. We avoid blame. And we start with what worked because we have a negativity bias as humans. I think we're like 4 times more likely to remember bad things that happened to us. So we have to work extra hard on the positive. And then as a team, we surfaced all that wisdom. We then ask that last question, what might we do next time? That's where we put our big ideas hats on and incremental change hats on and really think about what can we do differently going forward. And that is just an hour long meeting, sometimes half an hour, that teams can do every 6 weeks that has a huge impact on the way that they do their work. So the benefits of the tool rounds, there are loads of benefits. The one that I usually start or lead with is the fact that it allows teams to get all the information out of people's heads and into the room. Typically, when we're doing a piece of work, we have a bunch of people around the table, and there's a reason we've chosen those 5 to 6 people. And they maybe represent a particular business unit or they have a particular skill set. And so we want to make sure we hear from everyone so that we have all the data that's available to us. Some people are more introverted thinkers, some people are more extroverted processors. And so when we use a tool like Rounds, where each person speaks in turn without interruption, we're giving everyone equal opportunity to participate in the conversation. And sometimes when I'm doing rounds, some things that I have to think about is, where is the leader going in that round? We don't want always the leader to go first and anchor the room. Sometimes we want the leader to go last, so they have to hear from everyone and then pull that thinking together into some kind of decision or call maybe. Rounds are really great because psychological safety is the biggest driver of team performance. And rounds is a really great tool to help people know that their voice is welcome in this conversation. And it's so welcome that we're actually going to structure our conversation in such a way that so that we can hear from everyone. So it is a really great tool to increase psychological safety within teams.
Jesse's comments about feeling safe remind us of Chris's idea of a person in conflict protecting their core needs. And feeling secure while you're being vulnerable is one of those needs. It's also a core practice in any coaching business. Creating an environment where your clients feel comfortable learning with you and voicing their conflicts is central to your success in supporting them toward their goals.
Psychological safety is a concept that was coined by a Harvard professor, Amy Edmondson. And then later on, Google have done a lot of research around psychological safety. And what that research showed was that psychological safety is the biggest indicator of high team performance. So a team with high levels of psychological safety will outperform a team of your most talented folks if they have a lower level of psychological safety. So psychological safety can be built using in three ways. One, by creating a learning frame, making sure that we're making it clear to folks that we're experimenting, we're learning together, that we might even fail. By making sure that we are including all voices or soliciting all voices, people know that their voice is heard. And then finally, by responding productively. So when people finally do speak up, they aren't necessarily chastised or felt made to feel bad about that. So psychological safety is the idea that people can speak up without fear. And it is one of the biggest, most helpful tools when it comes to conflict resolution, because we want people to be able to speak up. We want people to be able to speak freely when it comes to the conflict that they're experiencing.
What I love about this approach, and it's not unique to somatics, but it's part of it, is that there's an appreciation for any way that anybody is engaging comes from an honest place. So other people around them might not love it, but the truth is, however people are behaving, it's trying to take care of something. So when you start to think, gosh, this person's trying to take care of something, it's a much more generous place to be, and it's a much more open place to be as a coach.
Thank you so much to Chris Grego and Jesse Punyon for sharing their advice and practical steps to help clients work through and resolve conflict. And thank you for joining me on this episode of the Coach Factory podcast. If you've got questions about this topic or just want to let us know you found it helpful, go to coachfactory.chat and let's start a conversation. Or send me an email at Sean, S-H-A-W-N, at coachfactory.co. This episode was produced with the support of Come Alive Creative. To hear more episodes, get the show notes, and learn how to start, run, and grow your coaching practice, visit coachfactory.co.